Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturday.
Hey, you guys, it's Anna David with After Party Pod. And hi, I'm recording this in the weirdest state I've ever been in. And that state is tired. I am never, ever tired. I can't remember if I've ever explained this to you guys, but basically, I have more energy than I ever know what to do with. And I don't sleep terrifically well. And so my dream, the way I feel the best is, God, if I'm watching a movie, I'm on the couch and I start to fall asleep, it's like better than being on drugs. By the way, I took a lot of Ambien, so, you know, that might explain something there. But I'm just never tired. I work hard to get tired. I exercise a lot. I get up early, you know, earlier than I want to. And I can never manage it. And then today, I don't know what happened. Slept really well. I'm just tired. And I'm in my office and I went to go take a nap on a couch. I know my body won't take naps, but the fact that I wanted to was pretty cool. I mean, I closed my eyes for like 5 minutes and now I'm going to leave work, try to maybe nap at home. I don't know. It's all very, very weird and cool. And I thought, why don't I record this intro while I'm just like barely conscious, because, you know, it'll be more real. I don't know, something like that. This episode you're about to listen to, I have another one of my writers on this. Last episode was Tracy Chabala. Today's episode is Amanda Fletcher. She is an editor at the site. And she also writes not enough, because I give her so much editing work that she doesn't have time to, but she's an excellent writer, funny. And we talk about some of the stories she's written for the site in this episode. And the cool little surprise thing is that I brought Tracy back. And that's my new concept for the show, is that I have the previous week's guests come back and help me interview the current week's guest. It's not a shtick. It's just, I told you, I've been getting a little bored with the format. I shared this concept with a friend of the show, friend of mine. She knows who she is. She was the very first person I knew who came up to me and said, "Hey, I listen to your podcast. I really like it." And she has been quite instrumental. I always get feedback on the guests. She is pretty much responsible for this excellent sound system we now have. Because she complained vociferously about the sound quality before. She wasn't that down with the concept of three people, and talked about how, you know, it can be hard to tell who's talking and blah, blah, blah. So, I'm open to it. I've been having a lot more fun doing these with two people at a time. It's just less interviewee and, you know, better. So that you're about to hear. Been getting some great emails and, even one that asked me to answer a question. Now, because I'm barely conscious, this might not be the best time to, maybe it is the best time to answer a question. It's somebody who listens to the show who asked, how do you break up with a therapist? This particular therapist, it sounds like, has gotten a little people-pleasy and is less helpful and more just sort of, you know, whatever, not being helpful. I don't want to give too many details of this very sweet personal email, but I have been in this situation, and I had a therapist. I would say I actively disliked this man. Haven't had a lot of male therapists. It's not that he was the only one. It just didn't work. I think that the personality of the therapist, in this case, my guy was, I think, depressed. And so his feedback was always very depressing. It's completely the opposite of the therapist I have now. But I'm sort of that weird codependent, which is to say I'm not codependent at all, except when it comes to certain people. So I was just like, you know what, this is not working for me anymore. But it is so much easier, I think, And I don't think it's people pleasy to just say, you know what, I think I feel sort of done with therapy for the moment. I'm gonna take a break. Really grateful for all that you've given me. And that's my plan. It sounds really basic. I don't have any good tricks or anything like that. But, you know, you are paying a person to help you. And if they are no longer helping you, you should not be paying them or going to them, is my feeling. So, you know, and that therapist may work terrifically well for somebody else. It just like dating, I think. I don't know. I told you I'm tired. Anyway, thank you so much for that email. You know who you are. Thank you to other emailers who are giving great feedback. Some are saying they really like the relationship topic that we're going into more and more. That's going to happen more and more. Today's episode is, there's a lot about addiction and stuff like that. But anyway, I hope you like it. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
So yeah, we're going. Okay, and when I say we, I mean Amanda Fletcher, who writes for the website, who's gone mute. Say hi.
Hi.
And then we have last week's, when I say week, I mean 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Guest Tracy Chabala.
Hello.
And so she and I are going to chat with Amanda, and that's the new way we're doing it. So Amanda, you have to come back and chat with the new guest.
Excellent. I cannot wait.
It's going to be a blast when you come back.
So we were just talking about taking people to meetings and how whenever I've done it, they've never come back again. But have you had that?
Taking people to meetings and not have the, no, actually. But most of the time, the people I take to meetings are from within the group, I have to say.
The person who reaches out and goes, wait a minute, I'm kind of curious about this. Can I go with you?
Right. Yeah, I've had like a couple people who have done that, but they weren't sure if they had a problem. And they kind of come and they're like, I don't know. This is, I don't know if I have a problem. I might come back. But it was a positive experience for them, I think.
Mm. Meanwhile, Amanda single-handedly got somebody sober. Not, that's not what she said.
Not really, but kind of. I kind of did. Because I was already like a year and a half sober, and this person was, rock bottom, cocaine every 5 minutes. And she didn't go to a meeting with me, mm-hmm. but it was like, I like to think that it was like my shining example of sobriety. And,
sure,
and,
it was.
And that was kind of like what was the impetus for her to go back into rehab. And now she's a year and a half sober.
And it's an interesting jumping off point because I wanted to start by talking about, so Amanda wrote this story months ago.
I did.
She is an editor at the site, but she's a very talented writer. So we want her writing more for the site, but she pretty much ducks me every time I ask her to. But she wrote this story that did super well. Let's talk about that story.
So I wrote a story about stupid shit that sober or people say to sober people. Because I think that what we call them normies, I think normies don't really understand like the whole kind of gig, what happens. And I think a lot of people think that it's just kind of a phase that we go through. I know I was listening to the Amber podcast that you did, and you guys were talking about that too. It was like that idea of like, when's it going to be over?
Right.
Like, when are you going to stop being vegan and doing Kundalini yoga, that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. I know you're into meditating now, but that phase will be over.
Right, right. When are we going to be able to eat cheeseburgers again? It's just a matter of time. Because really, that's kind of the way that my addiction worked. It was like, I would stop for a certain amount of time and always go back.
Yeah. And so then they go, how long do you have to go to those classes?
Mm. How long do you have to go to those classes? What do you do there? Are they going to make you do arts and crafts? Are they going to make me do arts and crafts was actually a question I was asked.
Because
this person had been in rehab in Australia for ecstasy and apparently had to do copious amounts of arts and crafts.
Art therapy, as we know from our rehab reviews.
We know, and she did not enjoy it, which I don't get. Like, who doesn't love to collage?
No. By the way, I just got pitched this morning, and it sounds amazing, coloring books to decrease stress, and apparently it was on NBC Nightly News.
I did see that, yes.
It's the new thing, and I said, please send me a bunch of them so that I can do them and document if it releases my stress.
That's amazing. I would love that. Totally. I would totally do that.
Okay, so what stupid things, Tracy, have people said to you about...
I specifically remember a situation where I started a job and we all went for a happy hour, like 5:30 across the street. And, you know, that's always the worst because these people don't know that I'm sober. And, you know, it seems like the most innocuous setting in the world. You're just having a couple drinks or whatever. And I said, I don't drink. And my friend was just like, they have to ask why. I mean, I don't know why they can't just accept that. You know, it's so rude. But he asked why. And I said, well, you know, bad things happen when I drink. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'll just say, I don't drink very often. I'm not much of a drinker. And then he's yeah, that one is really good. I'm not much of a drink. So then he's like, well, you could just have one, you know, just have a beer. And I'm like, no, bad things happen. And then like, you know, 10 minutes went by and then he's like, you know, you could just have a beer. And I'm like, just fuck off.
Right.
So that was one of the ones I really remember.
I feel like too, when you say bad things happen, it's almost like people want to know what those bad things are. Yeah. Like you're like inviting like the story.
That's true.
You know, because it's not.
You should know. Go. I just get really boring.
I get sleepy and I can't talk. And, you know,
right.
And I totally go home. Boring. I like that. Yeah. I
go not home. Untrue in a certain way. I go
home with the bartender.
I want to learn to do that. I unfortunately go, oh, I'm sober. And I, because I had a terrible cocaine addiction. And, you know, right. But I also, because they ask what you do for a living, like I have no way to avoid it. And I kind of hate it, you know?
I feel like it's my story too. Like that's my thing. Like, so as soon as someone, you know, that's my opener, no matter where I am, how inappropriate it is.
Right.
That's the first thing that I'm talking about.
Right.
I think because, you know, I don't even have 3 years yet. So I'm still like super excited about it. And it's like my accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Like I'm 40 fucking years old. And my accomplishment is that I've been sober for almost 3 years. And
huge, and there are people who are 80 who'd love to accomplish that.
Totally. Yeah. Right. I found that one of the worst things for me, or one of the worst situations that I had with the whole, like, I don't drink, was that I was at a really good friend's wedding, and I was at the family table. I was in the wedding. Mm-hmm. And the way that they did it, which I've never seen before, was, like, they put us around the room, like, the wedding party. So we weren't at, like, a table with the bride and groom. We were with family members. And I was sitting beside, I called her Mean Grandma, like, all night, because she was such a bitch. And whenever they would cheers, like they would have champagne and I wouldn't drink the champagne. And she was like acting as if like I was personally like dooming their marriage to failure by not having a sip of champagne when it was time to toast the couple. And then I actually like, I gave this amazing, it's like the best wedding speech that was ever written. I was like,
was it recorded? Can you show
it? So proud of myself. I cannot. Well, actually it's probably on the wedding video. Yeah. I haven't seen. And she just like would not let it go. And I finally was just like, dude, like I'm sober. Like I don't drink. Yeah. Like get off my back, bad grandma. Like what the hell is your problem? You know? So that for me was like the most intense kind of moment. And it just happened to be that the wedding planner was sober. So it was like there was, it was kind of like a 911 call to get me like the fuck out of there and into my room. And that's how I escaped the wedding.
Well,
that's
and on you made, there, I believe. Yeah, you made a fun joke about it in that piece.
Yes. And that morning the groom was threatening to leave and go to Thailand and not marry her at all. So I felt like that was kind of what was gonna maybe end the marriage, not so much my not taking a sip of champagne.
Right.
Yeah,
I thought that was hyperbole in your piece. I didn't realize that was actually reality.
That's a crazy story. And it's crazy that how much people care about whether you drink or not. Yeah. And I think we talked about last time that that's a sign usually that they might have some sort of unhealthy relationship with alcohol. I mean, she must have just been like a traditionalist or something.
Yeah. Who knows? Grandma could have had a problem with alcohol. Yeah. I have a friend who I knew for years, and he and his wife would have these amazing parties. And my brother became friends with them. And he said to me about the guy,
he told me he doesn't trust you because you're sober.
Oh my God, that's
and
great.
And I hated that. I hated them. And then one day I'm sitting in a meeting and I see him walk in and I go, oh, this is a mirage. Like, this is the last person who would ever be sober.
Right.
And then I realized it was not a mirage and I started talking to him and I thought, oh, he'll be gone next week. He is my closest guy friend. He's been sober, I think, 4 or 5 years
I
now.
I love it.
And,
yeah.
And he's like, I probably did say that about you.
Right.
You know, I was so weirded out and threatened by sobriety, you know.
I've said that before I was sober. Like that because I remember my first experience of the 12 steps was a friend of mine, her sister. And it was like, she couldn't go to the drugstore. Like she couldn't buy shampoo without calling her sponsor.
Right.
And it was just creepy to me. Like I just didn't understand. Like I don't understand how you cannot make, and she'd been sober for a while, like probably 5+ years at least.
That poor sponsor.
I didn't get it, you know? Yeah. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, I don't trust her because she doesn't trust herself. That's kind of how it felt.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's weird.
Yeah.
I don't trust her either.
I totally agree.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What about you guys? Because I really don't talk to my sponsor that much. Like how?
You know, it's funny because I wrote that piece about can you overdo it on AA recently. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, I mean, my God, I have one of my best friends. She'll call her sponsor, you know, if she needs to wipe her ass. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's like, no, you know, we didn't get sober to just, you know, constantly have to refer our problems to somebody else. I think it's really important that we grow up. We learn how to think for ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, the decisions for me, the decisions that I know are the bad ones, I know I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But I'll call them or my friend or my sponsor just to have that, you know, added advice like, this is really stupid and you're going to pay.
Right.
My
it usually has to do with the boy.
Yeah. My conversations with my sponsor, she doesn't talk because I go, well, da 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 da, and I know that what I need to do is blah blah blah, and da 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 da, and that's like literally she just goes,
right? You worked it all out without her saying anything.
Yeah,
yeah. I will have to say that when I met this woman, I was like tweaking my ass off on methamphetamine. So perhaps I felt like maybe I was a little paranoid with how much she was talking to her sponsor.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about your use of methamphetamines and other chemicals.
Excellent. Let's talk about that. So should I like,
So okay,
how did it start?
How did it start? When was the first time you did meth?
Okay, so it started this way. I was dating someone who designed motorcycles and he had a high school friend. This is in California. He had a high school friend who was a tweaker. Mm-hmm. And I'm from Canada. I didn't even know what that was. Mm-hmm. And that I'm sure like I kind of did some kind of research and it was one of those things where like, oh my God, if you do it once, you're hooked. And it seemed like something that we would never do. And I remember the night we were at a barbecue at a friend's house and he always had pot and he always brought the bong. He always brought the party, this boyfriend of mine. And he pulled out the baggie of speed and put some crystals into the bong. And I just remember being like devastated. Mm-hmm. Like, I already lived with this person and we were talking about getting married and like I was like really tight with his parents and we were like putting together a guest list for our wedding and it was just like I felt totally betrayed because not only did he do it when I kind of like was like, what are you doing? He kind of laughed it off and acted like, oh, I was making such a big deal out of nothing. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I was kind of that person that was like, all right, if you're going to flush our life down the toilet, I'm coming. Like, because I'm an addict. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's just the way that I react to the world. Mm-hmm. So I think that the next weekend I did it, I had a friend who was a gay porn star. And he was, like, really active in, like, the gay rave community. So I did it with him. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of on from there.
But you didn't smoke it in a bong anymore. That was just a one-time thing.
I did not smoke it in the bong that first night. I was just like, oh my God, mortified. I can't believe he's going to do it. Mm-hmm. But I did smoke speed out of the glass bulb for probably 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember the last day that I did it of standing in the living room. And when you're smoking speed, it's like, I feel like you don't go and get a new pipe because it's like the most humiliating thing ever. So you will smoke out of light bulbs.
Ew.
Like you'll smoke out of like a broken pipe. And I at some point, like the bulb was broken and I was like using like whatever end I could get. And I remember one of my friends walking in the room and just the look on his face. And I was like, okay, it's bad now. Like
right.
I should probably not be doing this. Plus I was hearing voices and like crazy shit was going down.
But it was the friend's judgment.
Yeah. It was like the look on his face because honestly it was like you don't see yourself
yeah.
until you see it reflected in someone else. And that's kind of how I stopped drinking too. It was like I had breast cancer. I was going through 6 months of chemo. I was bald. I had no eyelashes. I was still pre-partying when we went out. So it would be like I'd have like a bottle of wine before we'd go somewhere because they didn't tell me to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. They just said, it's probably not a good idea that you drink too much, right. You know? And ended up at like the Huntley or the Peninsula or some very shishi hotel in LA on the top floor, puking my guts out. Like apparently I was like throwing up in like a takeout bag. I was completely blacked out. I was at some point grabbing handfuls of food off of people's plates and shoving it in my mouth. And like literally like I look like an alien. Like I look, cause I would put like full face of makeup on like to make myself look even crazier, like super black lips and like no, like it was insane. Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't remember any of it. And waking up the next day was like, did we have a good time? Like, I don't even remember coming home. And it was the first time one of my friends was like, I can't do this with you. Like, I can't watch you. And I didn't stop drinking then, but it planted the seed for me to be like, you know what? It's time.
I had a thing like that where just to date how long ago this was, I was going to the premiere of There's Something About Mary. Yeah. Okay. And it was, you know, in Westwood, I was living in West Hollywood. So to get there and deal with traffic and parking, it was maybe like 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. And I was talking to a guy I knew and I was like, yeah, I'm just doing some coke. And then I'm going to drive over there.
Right, right.
And I remember him going, you're fucked up if you're doing that. And what's crazy is he ended up having the worst drug problem. I don't think he's sober anymore. He was one that I went to dinner with, he and a porn star, because I was writing a story for Details on porn stars who are prostitutes. And
of course. Doing some rails.
And we were at Ago, and I remember we'd sit there and they'd be like, we're going to go to the bathroom. Like that thing where I'm like, you're going and you're just, you think I don't know that right. You're going to the yeah. bathroom together, a man and a woman, and right. doing bumps. Like how? Yeah.
Right.
And, but it was his judgment of me. I remember that so well.
Right.
Going, oh, that's fucked up.
Right. So when you were doing coke and someone said, so when are you going to be here? Were you like, oh, I'm just doing some coke and then I'm going to get in the car and go? Like,
probably.
How did that conversation probably. Go?
I was so open about it. I remember a guy I dated. I remember we went to dinner and I was like, I'm a coke addict. He's like, oh, good. I'm a pill addict.
Oh, sweet.
But I've got some coke. Do you want to go back to my place and do it? Like, that's how our first date went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tracy? Experience
with the drugs and the dates
being judged.
Oh yeah,
that being a wake up.
Well, the irony is that I was judged from the very beginning. You know, 10 years before I got sober, I remember I was hanging out with she was my best friend, and she was the one that did a lot of pills, did a lot of drugs, and I was really scared of drugs because my sister became schizophrenic from doing tons of weed, which she was predisposed. But anyway,
story on After Party.
It's on After Party. So it was actually after that. I tripped out once on weed, but I drank and I did all these drugs. And my friend, who was the hardest partier I knew, wrote me an email and was like, I can't be around you when you're intoxicated. And I'm like, but you're the one. I'm always getting intoxicated. You know, and she's just such a crazy partier going to these raves and stuff. So. But it wasn't a wake-up call. I don't know what was happening in my mind, but I was just like I was kind of like, huh, that's interesting. And that was it.
Yeah, I remember people doing those, like where they were actually concerned. This guy wasn't concerned. It was the fact that it was just like, I felt like the, because you can write off the concern and be like, oh my, you get defensive.
Right.
I think. Right. I remember a guy who I'm still friends with. We did coke all night with some other people, and he drove me home at, you know, 7 a.m. And he goes, you were so much cooler at the beginning of the night. Like, you
would crush me.
But he did coke all night. He was like, something not good happens to you. You just got weird.
Well, then that's kind of hard to take that seriously because you're like, really, bro? Like, have you looked in the mirror? Like, he has rabbit face
but
and everything?
I remember it. So it did. You know what I mean?
It resonated.
Those things that you remember and you're like, why do I remember that? Okay, it must have penetrated for some reason.
It's so interesting because I feel like we remember those things and then we pull them out as like anecdote and then we feel bad about them all over again because I feel like that's kind of what happened last night.
Okay, yeah. So wait, were you going to say something, Tracy? I saw you kind of open your mouth.
I was just going to say that one time I was drunk, I beat up a bouncer. I got kicked out of the Good Luck Bar, and I just like attacked him. And that was another occurrence where people were like, you might have a problem.
Mm. So do you remember it?
I do remember it. I tried to pepper spray him. It didn't.
Why?
The pepper spray didn't work, you guys. Those things are like faulty.
You shouldn't have had pepper spray on you, just
I
to be clear.
I shouldn't have. Because I got 86'd. I was pissed off. So I went into the bathroom. I was like, fuck these people. They're not kicking me out of this bar. Went into the bathroom, locked myself in. I locked myself in for like 30 minutes. And they were banging on the door. I know, it's hilarious. They were banging. I mean, I was out of my mind. Banging on the door, banging on the door. They're like, you have to get out of here. So when I came out of the bathroom, I had my pepper spray cocked. And I was going to spray it in the bouncer's face. Unfortunately, it sprayed way over the side. He knocked it out of my hand. Then I started punching him. And it took three people to get me off of him.
Did he press charges?
No, I don't know why he didn't punch me in the face. He was very cute.
Did he ask you out?
No, he was. He kept yelling, "Get this crazy bitch off of me."
I don't blame him.
That's amazing. So that was my story. I think I drove home after that too.
That's great. Yeah, those drives.
Have you been kicked out?
No, but I spent my bad years alone at home doing cocaine, thinking the neighbors were spying on me with binoculars. Like that was my social life.
Yeah, I feel you.
Did you get kicked out of places?
I got kicked out of the strip club twice.
That's impressive.
Once for getting on the stage and once for making out with one of the strippers in like the VIP room.
You get kicked out for that?
Yeah. Because you're not supposed to touch them.
She should get fired, not you.
Right. She liked me a lot, I thought.
I don't blame her.
I don't think she liked me a lot. I was like totally fell for it. You're at a fucking strip club. Yeah, of course she likes you a lot. You know, as long as you have $20 in your pocket. Is that rude? Maybe she liked
me. No, I mean, maybe she loved you.
Maybe she did.
You're very worth falling in love with.
I'm lovable. This is a true story.
I went to a strip club and jumped on the thing and thought I should strip. And the manager goes, takes me aside and she goes, "Do you come into the bathroom? Do you do coke?" And I was like, how did she know? I mean, this woman's a genius. So we do the coke. It's really good. And she goes, "I have more." And I go, oh, I don't know.
Did you write a story about this?
No. Check out how this story goes. Okay, okay. It's in my first book.
Yeah.
She goes, well, there's an ATM right there. So I go, okay, great. I buy drugs off of her. She becomes one of my main dealers. And then I walk into rehab and she's sitting there. Oh, my God. And she just looks at me and she goes, I'm here because I got busted. We know each other from Temple. We don't know each other any other way.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't seen her since rehab. She was not into sobriety, that woman.
Oh my God, that is an amazing story.
Yeah. My writing partner and I used to go over to her house and she would tell us like that she just came up with some genius idea for a round towel because you never had to move when the sun, like stuff like that, you know? Wow. She was an entrepreneur.
That's actually a good idea.
I think it exists.
I'm like, round towel, can you buy those? I need that.
I don't think she was the first one to come
up. It's like a giant taco.
It clearly didn't take off.
Oh, wow.
Because we would all have them.
That's unfortunate. It's really annoying. That's unfortunate.
Those stupid towels. Yeah, that's one of the
stupid
things
towel,
I hate about.
Like, as in all towels.
Yeah.
So wait, we were at being judged.
Oh,
and being kicked out. Being kicked out.
Being kicked out and being judged. Like, I just find it interesting that like we're so worried about being judged.
Yeah.
But then I know for myself that I always give people material to judge me with. It's like I'm so concerned about being judged, but I will provide you with whatever information you need.
Which is a good segue into last night.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us what happened.
Okay, so basically I wanted to talk about having like a overshare hangover this morning. Like it really did feel like I drank last night because I couldn't sleep and I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning because I went for dinner with a new friend that I just met. She's like a very successful writer and she's older and she's accomplished and beautiful and cultured and yada, yada, yada. So already I'm insecure and nervous to go over there. And I just felt like when I have mommy issues. My mom died when I was 24. And I feel like when I get in these situations where I want the lady to like me, I tell them the most inappropriate things. It's almost like I want them to like me so bad that I'm going to throw everything in your face to make you to see if you'll stay or what.
But also, it's, I used to do this on dates. It's not effective. It's a way to pretend you have intimacy before you have intimacy.
Oh, yes.
You force them to know intimate details.
Yes, that's exactly how it felt. And at the time, it did not. I think it was more like this thing where, like, I'm uncomfortable with silence.
Yeah.
So she would just kind of sit there for a minute, and then I would just jump all over her with the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then as I'm leaving, I'm like, oh my God, like, I usually save at least two or three of those things for like
a second meeting.
Not even, like, even a month. Like, I don't usually, I usually portion those things out. Like, the person that I'm dating, he just found out, like, some of that crazy shit this past weekend, and we've known each other since October. Yeah. So it was just, I don't know, it was just very, very strange for me to, like, give all of that, like, everything. Like, Anne and I, you were talking about it. Like, I usually do, I portion it out. Like, I give you some crazy shit, but then I, like, hold some back because I want you to want me. And that way, it's going to keep you coming back, you know? And it was just so weird because I got home and it just struck me like I had behaved inappropriately and I couldn't sleep over it. And that's what I used to do when I would get, like, blackout drunk. I would wake up like at 3 o'clock in the morning, my eyes would open, or 5 o'clock in the morning, and be terrified of what I had done or said or who I had kissed. It was a lot of who I had kissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a stripper or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so, Tracy, have you had the overshare hangover?
You know, I don't. I think I veer on the side of reticence, like if I'm sitting with somebody I don't know, and I totally am uncomfortable with silence, but I'll just sit there like a mute. And then I'll make dumb comments about the weather. And then it's like in that piece I wrote about social anxiety. I just make an idiot out of myself. Although, you know, I have to say I've had good experience. Like, okay. When I really bottomed out, I ended up having to prostitute myself. It wasn't something that lasted a really long time. Oh, should God. I not be saying that on here?
No, you should be. You should be writing about it for the site. That's I all know. I can think.
The only reason why
I hijacked my podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, no, Tracy can drop some bombs.
I know that is a bomb. I mean, I oh my God, my family would die. But you know, it's my grandmother that I'm worried about. But she'll be okay.
Do they listen to After Party Pod?
No.
Okay.
They don't listen to After Party Pod. What was I going to say about that? So, but like, I keep talking about my current boyfriend. Won't go into the details about that. But he found out he just doesn't give a shit, and he's the most like stable, normal person. He's like, oh, that was in the past. You know, a lot of guys I think would freak out. So I've had and my roommate, who's also a normie, like I told her about it, and she's just like, eh.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Like, I just don't have a bad experience. Now, I'm more scared to talk about like the 5150s and the psych units and stuff like that. Crazy but shit. They're really crazy shit. Mm-hmm. The suicide attempts, the blood on the rug. I mean, I'm not going to go into this. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't let that out of the bag right away.
But I do love how open you are about it in writing. You know, every time I'm like, whoa. But like, and I don't mean this, I just think that like, when I hear these stories, and mine's dark as hell too, but just like that we're all walking around smiling, like you're the most charming, light girl, you know what I mean?
It's interesting that you would say that, because that's what she said, that's what like my dinner companion said, she's like, you don't seem, like do you feel like wrong or off or crazy, because that's always where I go. It's like, when am I going to go crazy? It's about time. So, you know.
Well, and like we talked about, and I was like, okay, you're like, I'm trying to figure out if I'm depressed.
Yeah. That's the conversation we got in. And she was like, do you feel depressed now? And I'm like, it's like 11 o'clock at night and I'm all like bright eyed and bushy tailed. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. Like that's still like such a complete disconnect for me.
My therapist said this to me recently, you know, that I walk in and I'm like, I'm upset about this. I'm depressed about this. And she's like, what you don't understand, like, you think you're so bad because you have so much awareness about it. She's like, I have people who come in here all the time and they seem great and they go, I'm so depressed, I don't know what to do, but they seem great and they don't know why.
Right.
Anyway, you're not like that.
See, that's what she was saying too. And so I'm like, okay, I'm comforted by that, but at the same time I feel like things aren't happening fast enough for me, I think, in my sobriety. It's like, I feel lazy. I feel tired all the time. Like, walking up the stairs to my apartment sometimes feels like my legs weigh, like, 400 pounds. So I'm like, is that depression? Like, I don't know. Like, I've had an eating disorder for, like, 15 years, and I really feel like people with food issues and body issues have a complete disconnect between what's going on in their head and what's going on in their body.
So interesting. Do you have eating issues, Tracy?
Oh, I had an eating disorder. I would say it was full blown in high school and in college, where I stuffed my face. I tried to be bulimic. I could not.
Very ineffective way to be thin, from what I hear.
Yeah, I couldn't. I did it once, and it was just so disgusting. Are you bulimic? Yeah. I
don't know. I'm not.
Okay. I was going to say it's so disgusting.
Yeah.
But I just, it like really took too much out of me. So I was like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 pounds heavier in college. I got over that. The antidepressants really helped with my binge eating. It just, I don't know. Or even when I do it, it's like, yeah, who cares? You know, it just took away the like, I don't know. I was so psychotic over how much I weighed. But the first thing I was thinking when you said you couldn't get up the stairs was, what's your diet like? Are you deficient in any vitamins, exercise, stuff like that? I mean, I'm terrible with that, but...
Interesting that you would say that, because she was like, do you think that you have an iron deficiency? And I was like, I did not think about that, but I don't eat things with faces. Like, I rarely eat red meat, so that's quite possible. I do eat a shit ton of kale, because this is Los Angeles.
How could you be unhealthy if you don't... Well, I guess protein you need.
Right,
but
yeah.
Protein. Peanut butter.
So, I don't, you know... I feel like the whole bulimic thing... it was like my way of like torturing myself for so long, because it was so hard, and it was like, you know,
it's brutal,
like
the, on the system.
Brutal on the system. And so that was another segue into using speed, because then I stopped wanting to eat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember one night saying to a friend, trying to justify why I was staying home to do coke. And I was just like, well, I won't eat. I'll be thinner tomorrow. And she was like, oh, okay. She was an alcoholic. She's now sober. I don't have, it's kind of like, I can't believe I've never had panic attacks, and I can't believe I've never had an eating disorder. Like, those seem like things I would have.
Mm.
You're so thin, naturally. It's wonderful.
Well, bless you. You know what I am, is an exercise addict.
Yes, I've done that.
Yeah. I love it. It doesn't not work for me.
Right.
Like, it I need it for my serotonin.
I can tell the difference when I don't. Like, I really do get the fact that like breeds like. So if you're a slothful, you're going to remain slothful. And if you're active, you're going to remain active. And because I see it happen with myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to my general practitioner. I was like, I wonder if I'm depressed. And I was like explaining it to him. And he's like, I think you just need to get off your ass.
Right, right.
And I'm like, okay, fine. Like, be that way.
Right. Well, procrastination is a major characteristic. Tracy, you are not a procrastinator.
Yeah, you are not a procrastinator.
You
I don't want to hear it.
A million words a week.
You can't even comment on that one. I don't want to hear
it. Do you believe you're a procrastinator?
Yes. Oh my God, I believe I'm horribly lazy and a horrible procrastinator.
Wow, that's alcoholism.
Because sometimes I'll wait. Like, I know something's due. And I'm like, well, I have sleeping problems too. So I'll stay up, and then I'm sleeping during the day and I can't focus to write. And then it's like 10 o'clock and I'm like, I need to get these articles done. Why the hell is it 10 o'clock? Oh, let me step in and watch The Voice with my roommate. You know, so I do those things.
Yeah, but you still get it done. Like, sure. I found that when you said, Anna, well, if you're going to write something, then you just write on the doc, you know, when it's going to be due. Like, when you think, and I'm like, that is so not going to work for me. Like, you have to tell me when it's due. Like, no take backs, no changesies. Like, I need to know.
Your next story is due tomorrow.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. It's called the drop dead deadline.
Yeah.
Sometimes
we don't have them around here.
Well, you wouldn't, because it's not print. I know that sometimes it helps me when you write print. It's got to go to the press. What are you going to do?
I turned in like every book like 2 months early. I am
so amazing.
Anal and, you know, obsessive and weird like that.
That's
awesome. Oh, that reminds me. What characteristics of alcoholism that you hear about all the time do you not relate to? Because that's mine, that I'm like a procrastination. I don't relate to that. You hear people talk about, oh, alcoholism is blah, blah. Like, do you relate to every single characteristic you've ever heard?
Why don't you take that one, Tracy?
Okay. Absolutely not. I feel so strongly about it.
And you did write about this.
Yeah. I feel very, in my article about can you overdo it on AA, I feel very strongly that alcoholism is something that propels you to drink and drink and drink and drink, and that's about it. So my fear, my neuroses, it's just that those are things that I've seen in so many people who aren't alcoholics or don't have an addiction. So I just call it fear and neuroses, and that's about it.
But do you have things that you hear people talk about where you go, that is not me?
No, I think anything that has to do with controlling other people, although I think that's more of an Al-Anon thing, mm-hmm. but I definitely don't have that. Mm-hmm. So some of the control issues.
What about, caring about other people's feelings before, I don't relate to that.
I don't relate to that at all. Okay. I'm opposite of an Al-Anon. I piss off a lot of my friends because I don't call them back and I, you know, it's a problem.
Wait, Amanda, do you have characteristics you hear about that you don't relate to?
That I don't relate to?
That are supposed characteristics of alcoholism.
No. Alcoholics. I feel like I have all of them, mm-hmm. that I am a procrastinator. Actually, no, I don't care about other people's feelings before mine. But
that is Al-Anon, I think, more.
Okay, because that would be the only one. Because I feel like all of the shortcomings, but I feel similar to Tracy in that I feel like those are human things. Mm-hmm. They're not alcoholic things. So I don't know about, whenever I say alcoholic brain, I feel like it's just that we drink over them. It's mm-hmm. human brain. We just drink over those things.
Yeah, I just think the volume's turned up really high, but it's the same stuff everybody has.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at
it. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
But I also believe a lot of that is parenting.
Yes.
Yeah. How you're parented.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think it absolutely has to do with so many ways that we turn out. I've noticed it with people in the rooms. Like, I didn't have a perfect upbringing, but I did have really supportive parents.
You had B+ parents because you just read about it.
That's true. I just wrote a story about B+ parents. I mean, they encouraged me so much to use my mind, to go to school, to make something of myself. And it's like that is a driving force. Now, maybe it's to excess, but I don't know. I think that helped me, you know. I don't know, helped me something.
I'm so jealous of that because I did not have that. I was not encouraged in that way. You know, my mom killed herself. I have a cousin, an aunt, an uncle that all committed suicide. Have an uncle who like murdered a couple people.
Same one who committed suicide or a different?
No, different. So it's like, you know, my mom has 7 brothers and sisters and we have just like rampant, like absolute craziness.
But not alcoholism. It was mental illness.
Mental illness. And then I feel like my mom, like closer to the end of her life, and my stepdad would never admit this, but that she was drinking heavily. I think she was. I have an aunt who agrees with that consensus, who's also a self-proclaimed alcoholic who still drinks mm-hmm. because like in my, you know, I quit drinking, she quit drinking for a while, but in my hometown, I'm Canadian, it's a small town, and like meetings are so depressing. Like everyone is just, you can just tell it's like
they're older and not funny.
They do not want to be where they are at, you know? So it was just like, I feel like that part is like overcoming that part of that, like kind of being damaged. Yeah. Was very like knowing I was damaged was a very prevalent theme in my childhood.
Wow. Right. And I do think that the reason people with mentally ill parents get screwed twice is they've got the genetics, which is why the parents are mentally ill and not great parents.
Right.
Often.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And then you're getting the kind of like slipshod parenting.
Yeah.
But I come from partiers too. It's like my parents, I can remember like going to the cottage and they'd have a teapot, like an antique teapot, and they would just pour all the booze into the teapot and then they would run around the fire and pour it into each other's mouths and yell, "Cup of tea."
In British accent?
In British accent. That was my shit, British accent. But yeah, in British accent. So like that was how like I knew that like getting drunk was like the bomb. Like I just could not wait to do it.
That's so interesting. My dad is a gambling addict and probably a sex addict, an alcoholic, like beyond repair, this man.
Wow.
Mentally ill in a way you can't imagine. And when I got sober, he decided to go to AA too. Like it was all so crazy. But he would get DUIs and stuff like that. So, but it never looked fun. But weirdly, my parents are divorced and remarried to each other, you know what I mean?
Oh.
It's crazy.
They're remarried to each other?
Yeah.
Huh. That's like in that movie Chef. I didn't think that stuff really happened.
Oh, my grandparents, my mom's parents were divorced and remarried to each other 3 times.
Shut up.
There's something kind of cute about that.
Nothing cute about my parents. Nothing cute at all. But my mom's
got to cost a lot of money. Okay.
That they just like smoked pot. Like she's the least addicty alcoholic person in the world, and like they just smoked pot. My dad got it from his trainer. Like it's all so weird.
That is amazing.
What's your mom like?
My mom's amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing. Ooh, like, sense. Yeah, just brilliant, funny, loving. Like I was just with her last week. Like just I lucked out. I mean, there's stuff. There's always stuff.
There's always stuff.
But our relationship now is amazing. So yeah, I mean, I think one parent can make up or sort of for the other.
That's, you know, and I wouldn't know that about you because you do present very well.
Very well.
Really well. And sometimes that can work against you.
Can I just tell you, my therapist even says that? Like, mm-hmm. I'm surprised at how together you actually are.
It is surprising, and I'm like, honestly.
Brown chicka brown cow. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just no self-pity around, you know, having had cancer.
Yeah.
And...
because it's, well, how can you? It's like, I remember when, like, being diagnosed and people saying, oh, you're so brave. And it's like, I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like I chose it. I wasn't like, hey, give me the cancer because then people will know how brave I am. Like, what the fuck do you do? Like, of course I'm brave. You know, I remember walking into like a skate shop and the girl that was working the desk asked me if I had cancer because she was bald too. And she had had breast cancer and she had no health insurance. So she only had one breast. And she was like the most rad looking chick I have ever seen. And she was just kind of like, yeah, I have one boob. Like, you, one day I'll get it another one. Like, I'll get it replaced. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like a faulty, like a tire missing or something. And I'm like, that is fucking brave. Mm-hmm. Like, what I did, like going to Cedars and getting the best doctors and the best plastic surgeons, like, that to me wasn't brave. That was just kind of like lucky.
But in terms of self-pity being a characteristic of alcoholism, that is what I relate to.
Oh, okay, yeah. I feel like I'm pretty good with that.
That's amazing.
But
that's
also
why you're not depressed.
Well, I'm also really good at being not the victim, but maybe it is the victim, but I'm thinking the patient. Because, you know, part of my story is also getting drunk at Havasu and jumping out of a boat and hitting my head on a rock and breaking my neck in three places.
I didn't know that.
And ending up in a halo. So I wore a cervical halo for 4 months. So I'm very comfortable as the patient. Like, I'm very comfortable being taken care of. Like, that's a role that I take very well in my life. So it's almost a relief, I think, to legitimately need to be caretaken. Mm-hmm. So that's some kind of fucked up codependency shit, right?
I don't know.
You're lucky you didn't end up a paraplegic.
So the thing was that where my brakes were, that I would have suffocated because it would have, paralyzed my breathing apparatus and I would have died. That didn't happen.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Yeah, no, I definitely relate to the self-pity. I think one of the reasons why, not to talk about A, but I do think one of the reasons why it works for me is I do resonate so much. I am so full of self-pity and like indignance and defiance. Like, you know, and I have to say, like, in sobriety, that's something that I've become aware of, and, mm-hmm. and it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just be aware of it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, I think it's so interesting because, you know, they tell us in the program that you're supposed to stay single for like the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like going on 2 years and I'm in this relationship. And I feel like you were just saying, like, you're mirrored off of like other addicts when you're in AA. And I feel like this relationship is doing that for me. It's like it's mirroring back to me my defects or like mm-hmm. who I am and the things I want to fix. And it's helping me to like love that like kind of damaged, broken part of myself, which I think happens too in the rooms. It's like we have limitless compassion for other people that we don't have for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a super exciting thing that's happening to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I look at this person, I'm just like, oh my God, like you are so self-absorbed and so selfish. Mm-hmm. And you always get like the big piece of cake because that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. And I can finally like give the other person the big piece of cake. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a rad discovery in my sobriety.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a very similar thing with this, the last person I dated, where it became this thing where, like, just this is a random example, but he never came over. It was always me going to mm-hmm. his place. And I've always been so selfish that I liked it. I was like, I can be the bigger person.
Right, mm-hmm. right. I have a little bit of that, totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's like when people ask me to drive them to the airport. I'm like, you thought I would be that selfless? Okay, it feels good. It feels good. I'm serious.
I agree with you. That's
I will drop people off. I will not pick those motherfuckers up.
Oh, that's the worst, yeah.
That's not happening. Burbank is no big deal.
Oh, really? Good to know.
Yeah.
Never been there.
Oh, best airport ever. What? Tracy's nodding emphatically.
I'm not, yes. I've done the airport thing for so long. But yes, Burbank is easy as pie, unless it's around the holidays.
Good to know.
Even then, I'm glad that we're really getting into the Burbank. Like, so relevant.
See how I'm just like segueing like all over the place? Like, oh, that's interesting that you say that about your mom. I'm going to bring that back to like AA in the 70s.
But that's how it goes. You know what's funny about that is never has a person left this podcast. You didn't, Tracy, last week, and said that was terrible. Like, they were like, I was terrible. It's like the most, talk about an alcoholic, you know, characteristic. Right. Wasn't I awful?
I was amazing.
Yeah, you're saying it already. And people are always amazing. I have not had a terrible guest. And that is just, I'll do that sometimes with like TV stuff where I just go, God, that was awful. And then I go, well, they keep asking you back.
Yeah. Right.
Possibly my perspective is off.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
It's, you know, I have done one other podcast.
Lady who works here.
Have still not listened to it.
Interesting.
Because I feel like I sound a little bit like Kermit the Frog.
Oh my God.
I'm a little nasally.
No, you're not.
Come on. And I was totally unprepared, and I did the thing. I did the oversharing thing. So I was totally like going off on tangents, and I was like so embarrassed because, you know, Mary Patterson was trying to ask me about like my book, and like she was kind of trying to like kind of steer it in a way that could be like possibly something good for my career. And I just wasn't grabbing it, you know?
Well, this, if anyone listening, if this matters with them, you're one of the best writers ever.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
And
she says that about everyone.
I do. No, I agree. And you're working on a book. Yes. So should we talk about that?
Yeah, we can quickly talk about that, because the book that I'm working on is right now, like it's like loose leaf pages around my studio apartment. Mm. But the story is about me breaking my neck and basically, how we learn what it means to be broken, how as people we learn that it's just a human condition, that being broken is a human condition, and how we learn to love ourselves when the people that are supposed to love us the most abandon us. Mm-hmm. My mom killed herself when I was 24, and I broke my neck when I was 28, and it was kind of like, I don't know, like, how do you learn to love yourself when the person that's supposed to love you like unconditionally forever leaves?
Yeah,
you know. But it's also like, it's this really dark, heavy material, but it's also this love story to my best friend in the whole world who was there for everything for me. You know, he was the first phone call I made from the hospital, and he was the one who like got me out of bed and like helped me brush my teeth. And he was the one that took care of me when I was in my halo. And ultimately I had to let go of that friendship because he was married and we were grownups and it was time to move on. It was kind of like, it's kind of like a darker version of that, like You, Me, and Dupree movie with,
I never saw it, but
it's like Kate Hudson and
Owen Wilson.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Where you kind of have to, you know, what can we expect from the people that love us and the people that we love? Like, where are the boundaries? Cause I had no boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then, and I was totally, I look back on it and I think, God, I was like somewhat unlovable,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he still was like there for me no matter right. what, you know?
Right. What do you think about those people? Like, I was wholly unlovable back when I had, you know, boyfriends that, you know, wonderful men. And I'm like, were they just completely codependent when I was not sober?
Mm.
Did they just have that I want to save her thing? Because
totally. I think that
was not deserving of that love as I see it now.
So interesting, because I just wrote an essay about shame and how I was like obsessed with what we deserve. And, you know, I didn't feel like I deserved to have the mom who killed herself. Like, what did I do to deserve that? Mm-hmm. I don't deserve to be the motherless daughter. I don't deserve to. The essay is actually about like a fucked up boob job that I got before my breast cancer. So it was like, I don't deserve these fucked up tits. And I didn't deserve the dead mom. But I also didn't deserve the like doting boyfriend who just wanted me to be happy, mm-hmm. you know? And I did conversely feel like I deserved breast cancer because of all the fucked up shit I did to myself. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, I don't think that we deserve anything, because I don't think that babies deserve to die from weird blood diseases, and people don't deserve to starve to death. And my mom didn't deserve to end up in the fucking garage right. with the motor running. We don't deserve anything. What we get is this like grace, whether we believe in spirituality or God or whatever. It's like we get these situations that we don't deserve.
Right.
You know, I didn't deserve to get cancer, but I also didn't deserve to find it so quickly and have it out and within a month and like,
but that's and be attitude. Fine. I mean, I do think, what do you think about deserving and all of that, Tracy?
Well, I have very, like, I personally believe that the universe is just complete chaos. Nothing right. happens for a reason.
Atheist we got here.
Yeah, we got, okay. so I think that, you know, I've had somebody who's, okay, I knew somebody who was sick, and people would say, why did that have to happen to you? And she would say, well, why not to me?
Why not?
Because it happens to all sorts of people. But I definitely don't think anybody deserves, there's no way in hell you deserve something bad to happen to you. I think the people on Wall Street deserve to have something bad to happen to them. But outside of that, it's like, no, you know, this is just, it's, it seems to me that what happens on this planet is totally absurd and a complete crapshoot.
So do you believe in karma? Is that what
you're saying? I don't believe in karma. Okay. I really don't. I mean, I believe in the legitimacy of cause and effect. And I think that when you have a, when you take an action, you're going to have consequences. Right. And some people seem to escape those.
They sure do.
Right?
They sure do. My feeling on that is, you know, I believe that everything happens the way it's meant to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I believe that or if I just know I feel better believing it, so right. I choose to believe
yes.
it. I also believe in terms of God or higher power doing things for people, that it's like horoscopes. If you believe it's true for you, it's true for you.
Right. And it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, yeah. Yeah.
It's like a psychic reading. Mm-hmm. Do you believe it? Well, you know, it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this everything happens for a reason stuff is, I was just talking to my friend at breakfast about that, is it's like, it takes some more, you know, when I had a terrible year and what came after that was the best year of my life. And it was because I was grateful every day
yeah.
for what I had because of what I hadn't had.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. there is a reason, but like, well, does God want me to suffer? I guess sometimes.
Right.
You know, and in terms of what you said earlier, Amanda, about it's not happening fast enough is, you know, the lesson, you know, all God wants to teach me is patience over
right.
and over and over again.
Right.
Nothing happens right. fast enough. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
I just feel like especially because I'm someone who used for so long, you know, I had my first drink when I was 12 and I had my last drink when I was like 37 or 38.
Mm-hmm.
And in between that, there were eating disorders and cigarettes and sex and the chronic exercise and the, you know, drugs, you know, tons of drugs. This is the only, I always would say the only place I drew the line was like sticking a needle in myself. Not true. Cause I did growth hormone for like quite some time.
Sorry. Needles gross me.
Yeah. So,
do those work?
Does growth hormone work?
In terms of thin?
Yes, absolutely. It
bad,
does.
Bad thing
yeah.
to do.
Yeah. Well, they give it to AIDS patients because they are wasting, you know, they're wasting away. So growth hormone helps them to retain muscle and decrease body fat and makes your skin. It's amazing. It's mm-hmm. amazing. It's the shit. It's the shit. It's very, you can get it from AIDS patients that are selling it to buy other drugs, which is where we got ours.
Wow.
But yeah, I feel like I lost so much time, and I look at people like with regards to success, and even I feel maybe I was triggered a little bit last night with this woman mm-hmm. who's like, it's like all these like really, really, you know, accomplishments, a lot of accomplishments under her belt, and friends that are coming out with books, and I just feel like I lost so much time already that it helps me to go to Shauna Mahan's book party last week, and she's 50 and it's her first book.
Right,
and
right.
I love that because right. it's just like, oh my God, it can happen. It can still happen.
Yeah.
And remembering that it happens in time, like we all have our own time. Yeah. It's all have our own timeline.
Yeah. That's one of the hardest things for me. That is one of the hardest things for me, is comparing myself to somebody who's accomplished something a lot younger than me. And I'm constantly fearing that I'm wasting time. And somebody said, you know, life isn't a parking lot. It's not like somebody's going to take my spot, you know? And I personally think we get seasoned as we get older, you know, we're like wine. I mean, not to bring up wine, but we get better with age.
Dare you, I'm triggered. I'm not even going to say the depressing thing about writing, but I used to be consumed by jealousy about other people's books doing better than mine. And, you know, and then I would go, you know, I'm so jealous. And then I'm like, well, people are jealous. Like, if I looked at my life, I'd be jealous.
Exactly.
So it's absolute madness. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but how close do you think compare and despair is to jealousy? Do you think it's the same thing?
I think for me, the issue is that I don't even care about like the book. It's that I don't write every day. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's what I want. It's the process. Yeah. And it's like, I am so jealous of people that are engaged in the process because I'm not doing that. Like, honestly, like I feel like I am just kind of treading water, and I think about it. You know, I don't even like to talk about the book because it's been so long since I've actually like worked on it that I feel like I'm an imposter. And I think that's where it comes from. It's just like, I just want to be writing. Mm-hmm. I want to be finding the joy in the writing, and I'm not even doing that. So what a horrible human being I am. I'm going to hell.
It took me years. I go through such awful spurts, like where I won't write. I mean, I didn't write for 3 or 4 years when I was working in these kitchens. It was ridiculous. Everybody's like, what the hell are you doing? You know? And I know in early sobriety, I couldn't write anything, exactly. Nothing. So I know, I feel like I've really kind of caught a groove, like I've a little after five years, but it just, I believe personally that it's going to come when it comes, and that's, yeah, kind of an innuendo, but it will, you know. I believe that, because you're a writer, you have it in you.
Yeah, I think so. I remember in rehab sitting there, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to write again. Because all I did when I did coke by myself was think the neighbors were spying on me and jump whenever I heard a noise, and write.
Yeah.
And by write, I mean revise. I was writing scripts, then revise one line of a screenplay over and over and over again.
Right.
I mean, for like 3 or 4 years.
I was in a writing workshop, and we had to, like, we had an assignment where we were supposed to submit like our first 100 pages. It was like, put together like your first draft, like make it look as professional as possible. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't do this. And I was freaking out. And it was like, my eating disorder was I was puking all over the place. And I just like smoking cigarettes, just trying to sit there and finish. And my writing instructor was like, great, that means it's good, like keep going. And don't I find my someone who I was in a relationship with and living with, his stash is like maybe 2 8-balls, like not even just one, like of coke. And he wasn't supposed to be doing drugs. He had promised me he wasn't doing drugs. So I'm like, I can literally take half of this and he will not say anything because he's not supposed to be using. So I took half and I wrote 40 pages. I stayed up that whole night and it was awesome. And since I've been sober, I haven't had that kind of, and the pages are good. I know people say the pages are shit. The pages were good and I can still use them.
Did you ever try doing that again?
No.
I had that experience where I wrote a spec for a TV show I'd never seen and it was good.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, and then that's what I tried to repeat for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I didn't do that.
Okay. Time three.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Quickly.
I'm happy to hear that because I have been struggling in sobriety to find my voice. Not my voice, because I know my voice is there, but the drive, to tap into it, to feel like I'm interesting. Because before I got sober, I thought I was the most interesting motherfucker that ever lived. You know, like, look at my story. It's so interesting. And I'm like so unique. And then you walk into the rooms and it's like, oh my God, like these, I'm not.
Yeah, but not everybody in the rooms can tell a story.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
In fact, most of it, and then tell a story on paper.
Right.
So, and you convey that very, very well.
Right.
And you're articulate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's about the story we have. I think it's about, you know, how we tell it. And
okay.
Tell it.
Right.
You know? Okay, we got to wrap up so you can get out of here.
I think I have to go to my psychiatrist.
what was I going to say? Well, nothing except that this has been a delight. Isn't it fun to have a three-way?
Yeah. I love it.
I love the three-way.
When you go with four, though, you split off. Just saying.
Oh, no innuendo there. Okay. Delightful. Wonderful. Okay. Did y'all hear that?
Technically an orgy. Somebody pointed that out to me when I said I had a foursome.
Oh, next story. Next story.
Next time I'm here. Foursomes.
All right, you guys, that was the After Party Pod with Amanda Fletcher and Tracy Chabala. Do you like this new format? 2-on-1, can you tell the voices apart? That's always an issue, isn't it, with things you can't see? Anyway, keep listening, keep sending email, keep reviewing. Love you. Thank you. Next time.